All right. Thank you. So for those of you who, you know, minimize the screens to see the speaker on big view, you can change your mind now that you've seen me and minimize that. But I'm really excited to be here. This has been a subject that has kind of consumed my life for the last 6 months, you know, podcasts and reading stories and all these things. And I genuinely find encouragement in the stories of others. And it's been, and to go back on that vaccination thing, if I could give one piece of advice based on my wonderful experience, don't get vaccinated. Just kidding. But I, and you'll hear as I talk here that, and I will focus on that. There was an extreme amount of trauma that I experienced, but it was overcome by all the other things that I had experienced. So my wife is here with me. Her name is Amy. And if you see Amy there, she's the one that's way out of my league. But I've got four little kids at home, two sets of twins, two sets of boy-girl twins, just the sweetest little kids in there. So four kids under 6 years old. So I'll get right into it. And pardon me, because I really feel like it's kind of necessary to talk about some of the trauma in my brain and some of the trauma that was going on during my experience. And so I hope you'll forgive me for dwelling on that. And I hope also that you'll see kind of the difference between the trauma and my experience itself. So this started, I'm an accountant, and in 2021, they extended the tax season to the deadline to May 17th. And on that very day, I was hospitalized. But a few days before that, I started feeling like I really had COVID. I had gone up in the canyons with my dad and started having some breathing problems and blamed it on altitude sickness. But when I really felt like I had COVID, we went to the emergency room and they gave me some medication and they put me on oxygen and sent me home. And so I had a rough weekend. And I don't remember much. I watched a lot of TV, but I don't remember much of what was going on. And it was a Saturday night, and I just really needed help doing anything. And I was laying there in the tub feeling like I was going to die. And sweet Amy, and she is the sweetest, but she was sick of dealing with my man cold, as she's done over the years. And she was getting a little bit impatient with me, and I like grabbed her hand and I said, Amy, just so you know, this kind of feels serious, and I don't want your last feelings for me to be frustration. I said, that would be a real shame if your last words were spoken to me out of frustration. And she said she was sorry, and I should have said I was sorry for laying on the guilt trip. But I started to feel a little bit better. I started to feel better on Sunday and was feeling good, but still felt like I needed to go back to the doctor. And so Sunday night, I think we had decided we were going to go in, but it was a little bit later. We were going to have my mom come and watch the kids. And we thought, okay, we won't call her tonight. She'll be asleep. So it wasn't any major urgency in our minds. And so Monday morning, bright and early, my wife calls my mother and tells her that we want her to come out and we're gonna go back into the emergency room and just get things checked out. And I shower. I'm able to kind of do those things. So I shower, and then I come downstairs and I'm just feeling really weak. And I said, Amy, and we live in American Fork, and I said, Amy, where's my mom right now? Is she close? And she said, she's just leaving Sandy. And I had just enough energy to say, call an ambulance. So at that point, I don't know exactly what happened. I think I kind of fell face first into a couch that was conveniently in the hall. We had moved some stuff out of our basement, but I remember just being face first in this couch. And an ambulance was called. And I don't remember a lot of this, but an ambulance was called and my four little kids were upstairs all hanging out in the same room. And they looked out the window and saw an ambulance and saw their, you know, saw the EMT straining to get their fat dad into an ambulance. Anyway, my mom showed up and Amy was able to leave the kids and follow me in the ambulance a little bit later on. And I want to go back to last words because as Amy showed up to the hospital, I had my mask on my face and she was so worried about me and just happy to see that I'm maintaining some sort of life. But she's also very aware of how serious this is. And she comes close to me and I say something to her and she thinks, oh, that can't be right. He didn't just say that. These can't be his last words. And they had cut my shirt off and put a lot of sensors on me. And so she comes closer to here and I remove the oxygen mask from my face. And I say what were to be my final last words. And I said, did you come to see my nipples? And later that day, she ran into my brother and she was not a horrified and worried wife. She was an angry wife because those were about to be my last words. But it got a little more serious from there. They knew that they had to intubate me. And, you know, they asked her for permission to just cut all my clothes off. And so they cut my clothes off and they took me into another room and, they essentially paralyzed me. They paralyzed me. Well, they started to try to put some tubing down my throat and I heaved so violently that they decided that they would paralyze me. And so I don't remember much after that. But my religious leader, who was also my next door neighbor, came to give me a blessing. And as he blessed me, he felt the need to say that I would be healed as long as I fought. And then he went home and thought, is he going to fight? So I want you guys to kind of catch that theme. Is he going to fight? Because it's a common theme. And that was not just his thoughts. That was my whole side of the family. Her side of the family is great. They give me way more benefit than they should. But my side of the family was really thinking, is he even going to fight this? And I just have a few things I really want to go over and want to make sure I talk about those. So you probably can get a glimpse into my character right now is that my family doesn't have a lot of trust in me. My neighbor didn't have a lot of trust in me. There were some concerns that I might not fight. And I was intubated and this was not something new to me. The COVID had been around. This was May 2021 and I had read probably way too much about COVID and understood the intubation process and, you know, the ventilators and things like that, but they put me on a ventilator and I did not understand that. I had tubing down my throat that I didn't know about. And I had a big piece of plastic in my mouth to keep it open. And then a tiny little oxygen mask at the end. And to me, this oxygen mask was my way of breathing. And I hadn't considered, I didn't feel tubing down my throat. And I thought this little oxygen mask was my only way of breathing. And there was this immense panic in me, an immense panic in me. And there was probably from the drugs, there was a misunderstanding. And I was hallucinating that people were wanting to kill me for my white skin in probably one of the whitest hospitals in America. So some really bad hallucinations and just this negativity, my brain could not come to the conclusion that of what was really going on. And these hallucinations were fighting against any sense of reason. but I could feel, I could just feel that I was not getting enough oxygen. And I fought and I determined that this big piece of plastic keeping my mouth open was actually blocking my airways. And there was this conspiracy that people wanted to kill me and that certain nurses didn't know about it, but somebody was trying to kill me. And so there was this very negative, this negative mood and this just purely dumb. My brain was just in a really dumb place. And I'm a religious man, but I couldn't, my brain was so dumb that I couldn't bring myself to pray. I couldn't bring myself to think of a happy song. I couldn't bring myself to think of a coping, depressing song. My brain was just in a really bad place. And I was in this state of confusion for about a week. But I felt like I was in the hospital for 3 months. For some reason, that first week felt to me like 3 months. And with these conspiracies in my brain and really hearing voices that were all bent on me dying, you know, not even me dying, just torturing me. I really felt like, as opposed to the torture, I would just rather die. I would much rather die. And so at home, now my wife has a better view of me than maybe her family does, than my family does, excuse me. She had a pretty positive attitude. Feeling a little bit devastated, but pretty positive. And she had prayed that I would have the comfort of my two children who had passed. We had a little girl pass at 16 months and we had a little boy pass at 8 years old. And she prayed that I, would have the comfort of these two children to bring me back. And elsewhere in my family, they prayed the opposite, that I might not run into these two children. They didn't have a lot of trust in my obligations and in these four little sweet little kids that waited at home for me. But the prayers poured in and I can't tell you how I knew this, but I physically felt these prayers. But even despite that, every thought I had, everything in the hospital was so negative. I couldn't move. I must have hit that nurse button 1,000 times. And it was just pure negative. And it felt like months. I needed a way to commit suicide, except that my hands were tied down and there was nothing to do. And I felt this guilt associated with that. And I thought, I can't do this, but I can't fight anymore. I can't prolong what they're trying to do to me. And my body was running out of energy. I was in this extreme panic and my body was absolutely running out of energy. And I fought a little bit longer and then I took my last breath. And then I kept living. That machine was breathing for me. But I physically took, I spent every bit of energy that I had to take that last breath. And I had probably run out of energy because of my sheer panic. And I sat there a little disappointed because I was still aware and I was still there, still sitting in the hospital. And my torturers were probably pleased because I was still in this state. And even though I wasn't breathing and I knew I could not physically breathe, somehow I was still alive. Nurses had come in and I know they could see the sheer panic on my face, but I don't think it occurred to them what was really going through my head. And so as time went on, I figured that they were in on this. Some of them were in on this and they wanted me to die too. And COVID hospital protocol at the time, and I assume up till now, is somewhat terrifying in the sense that those of us who aren't totally aware are not able to speak with family. if I had 5 minutes with my wife, she would have said, "Hey, dummy, nobody's trying to kill you. This is what's on, you know, what's going on. You're on a ventilator. This big piece of plastic in your mouth is part of the ventilator." And I had none of that. I had none of that during that time. And also I was in and out of consciousness during this time. And there probably wasn't a good time to call. And based on the look of my face, I maybe was a little more aware than they even knew during this time. But suddenly, amidst all this terror, I found myself in this place. And it was just a beautiful place. Imagine the Sydney Opera House. You know, they have kind of wings that open on the Sydney Opera House. And imagine a place like that, that opens to this expansive area and kind of tightens up into a tunnel. And now the tunnel is darker. And I didn't remember ever traveling through a tunnel as people speak of. But what this felt like was that I was at the end of a tunnel. And I just sat there, and on this side was an opening, and it was a wide open space. And on this side, it got darker. It wasn't ominous or anything, but it just got darker and more distant. And I sat there, and a little admission about myself is I'm an impatient person, and my wife drove me here just 30 minutes ago, and she'll testify to that I'm an impatient person. And yet I found myself waiting here, and there was not a single feeling of impatience in this place. And in my mind, I have to tell you something, and this feels a little bit embarrassing to admit, but in my mind, I just thought, keep in mind that I knew I was dying. I knew all of this. And yet, as I'm in this beautiful place, there's not even a consideration in my mind of where I'm at. And I think, oh, this is some sort of beautiful virtual reality that I'm in. And it's beautiful. It's stunning. And it doesn't fall outside of anybody's view of what heaven or of what a spirit world may be. But for some reason, my brain couldn't consider that. And it was stunning. It was as if this building had been manufactured of pearl, you know, like a 3D printer had printed something out of pearl, and light emanated from it. And the colors were pure colors. There were pure colors, and there was light emanating from everything, but there were no lights. And, you know, even in terms of characteristic heaven, out on the edges, there was kind of this hazy cloudiness that you would just put into your movie about heaven. And yet in my mind, I couldn't consider that. I didn't even think that. But this place was beautiful, and there was, partly because it was so clean, it was so impossibly clean, it smelled like flowers, something felt so unnatural about this place to me. You know, compared to Earth, this place was so indescribable. And I guess my brain was still in a dumb place, because I assumed that this was some sort of virtual reality. But I also had this understanding that the people were there to meet me. And it took time. And yet I just felt comfort, and I felt patience, and I felt like there was nothing that needed to be done, nothing important that lay in my way. And so this was a drastic change for me, from this moment of panic to this just calmness. And I knew that there were two people approaching me, and one of these people was a man, and he kind of stood back. And I don't know how I know this. I don't know how I know that he stood back, because I never saw this man, but he stood back, and I felt his presence. And a woman approached me, a 30-so-year-old woman had approached me. And the feelings were just pure. It was downloaded to me that this woman and this man had put a tremendous amount of effort into helping my family. And my brain, although I understood this, and I understood this to be absolute truth, I felt their love, and I felt love that was tangible, unlike anything I could ever explain. And that's an embarrassing thing to admit to my wife. She's way too good to me. And yet to turn to my wife and say, I felt love like you've never been capable of giving to me. That's a hard thing to admit. But it was a palpable love, and it was a love and a trust and a warmth and a feeling. And when things were communicated, there was no denying. And so to have this understanding that this woman and this man were putting serious effort into my family, particularly into my children. Immediately I tried to remember who they were. And my mind kind of went through my neighborhood, and I thought, okay, who are these people meeting me in this virtual reality space? And it wasn't so much who, it was, okay, what are their names? What are their names? I remember them. I feel them. I love them. What are their names? Where do they live? And I couldn't remember where they live. And I had the thought to ask them their names, and immediately had the thought of how horrifying that would be for me to ask them their names. They love us so much. We know them so well. I would be so utterly embarrassed to ask them their names. And so once again, feeling no sense of stress, no sense of time, I held back. And even though I couldn't see this man, I felt no sense of urgency to go find him right away and pin him down and whatnot. And that's just not me. I'm a very impatient person. But I found myself just feeling the beauty. And there was a lot of nothing. There was a lot of sitting there and just not even speaking, but just knowing that someone was there and feeling this reciprocal love. You know, and that was a little weird to think, okay, these are good neighbors and they love my kids, but why do I feel this tremendous love for these neighbors? So there was nothing else to consider in this moment, just a pure feeling of peace, as if everything bad had been pulled out of my brain, and as if my chest had just expanded into something wonderful. And there was nothing, there was no impatience. There was a smell of flowers in the air. There were no flowers, but there was a flowery smell and a clean smell. And this place was so perfect that it, in my mind, appeared to have just been designed. You know, somebody must have done this on a computer, and because there's no way a place could be this clean. I don't see a speck of dust. I don't smell a bad smell. And usually for me, all I got to do is sit down and get a little too close to my own armpits to smell a bad smell. But that was striking to me, this smell. And I truly did. I recognized the magnificence of this place. And my thoughts were, oh, I can't wait till Amy joins me here, so I can tell her about my 3 bad months in the hospital. 1 week. It was 1 week that felt like 3 months. But I was just overcome with love of these people. And even though I didn't see this man, I felt his love and he felt mine. And it was just an indescribable feeling. And even though I maybe misunderstood this place, there was no chance in my mind that these people were not who they said they were. And at this point, they hadn't really used any words. They hadn't physically open their mouths to speak to me, but I understood things about them. And there was no way of denying these things that they had said. I'm just going to kind of keep track of time. But absolutely no way to deny some of these things that they had communicated to me. The one moment that I truly recall somebody opening their mouth and speaking to me was a moment when this woman laughed at me. And this was not a laugh, but to anybody else, this may appear as, and it was very much an inside joke. There was an inside joke going on. And this woman sensed something that I misunderstood and she laughed at me. And this was not a laugh of, it was a different laugh. It was a laugh that my wife gives to my sweet three-year-olds when they misunderstand something. And I felt that love in her laugh. I knew that I had misunderstood something, but I felt that love as she laughed at me. There was no stress. There was no, you know, when somebody laughs at us here, we step back and we think, oh, what did I do wrong? What did I? There's so much stress associated with that. And yet I felt the purity in her laugh and just accepted that there was something that I didn't understand, and it probably didn't matter because she loved me. And I felt that love so strongly at that moment that she laughed at me. But things went on, and I just felt no stress, felt no need to rush anything, and just kind of enjoyed this place. And I don't even do that on vacation. I don't just enjoy a place, but I just enjoyed this place and felt no urgency. Well, suddenly I found myself back in the hospital. Well, let me step back. The first thing I noticed about this place was it felt wrong because I could move. I could move, and I knew I was supposed to be in the hospital dying. And you hear some of these things and you think, how could this guy not consider where he was or what was going on? But it truly was not available to me to consider some of these things. But I found myself back at the hospital, and things were still very serious. There was one point where I still don't know exactly what had happened, but a nurse came to me and said that something had failed and asked me if I wanted to talk about it. And I was, even though I just felt pure energy, pure love, and no stress, all of a sudden I was back in my body feeling as if I couldn't breathe. And she asked me if I wanted to talk about something, and I did. And I would barely move my mouth, and I couldn't do a thing, and found myself back into this same situation. Well, as I'm back here in the hospital, I'm in this very same state that I was in before, and I'm thrashing violently, and I had a little oxygen mask on my face and must have moved as much as I could, because I just slashed a really bad cut in my face. As I got out of the hospital, I had just a cut from here to here, and it was just a massive scab. But I was up to my same feeble brain tricks. My brain was not in a good place, and I once again reverted to this idea that people wanted to torture me. And I was in this terrible mood of panic, and they had even put movies on for me to watch, and the most thoughtful thing my brain wanted to do was write an essay about Transformers Dark of the Moon. Terrible situation to find myself in. Everything was unpleasant in the hospital, and I know these nurses were just the best. As I became more and more aware, these were truly the best nurses, and they cared. But in this state, it was just the opposite of that. So the violent reactions were still ongoing, and luckily my my hands were tied down and I was sitting here plotting. For some reason, I had it in my brain that if I could just give myself a concussion, I could die. And as soon as these machines stopped propping me up, I would die. And that was my whole goal in all of this, was dying. And I felt no guilt because I felt so strongly that they were trying to hurt me. And once again, I found myself back in this place. As the panic just overwhelmed me, I found myself back in this place. Once again, this woman was there. Once again, the man was there, but kind of back, out of the way. And I just felt this tremendous love. And at this point, this was even a longer period. And there was even less going on. In other words, there was not a need for small talk. There was not a need to accomplish anything. I simply walked around and I looked at this woman and just admired her beauty. Another thing embarrassing to admit to my wife, but I was just overcome by her beauty and just found myself just staring and admiring her beauty and admiring the beauty of this place. And it felt very innocent, but the love was there. I felt this very strong love for this woman. And finally, after a really extended amount of time of nothing, just comfort and peace, she sat me down and she put her hand on my knee and she said, "Travis, you need to calm down. You need to calm down. Everything is going to be all right." And once again, despite everything in my brain to understand what was going on in the hospital, despite a major misunderstanding in my brain, she had conveyed some sort of truth to my heart that was undeniable. And I knew this to be the case. So I felt this love once again, and unfortunately found myself back away from this place. And I was in the hospital once again. And I didn't immediately get over the idea that people were trying to torture me. But I did know that when she told me that everything would be okay, I knew that she was being honest with me. There was no way of denying that. And so I had come to accept that somehow somebody in the hospital would understand that they're trying to torture me, that somehow I would get out of this situation because she told me this. And I felt that love. I felt that. I don't know how to describe this, but the love, the truth, the peace, it was all one in the way that she communicated with me. And as different as these feelings were when I was in the hospital, feeling this ultimate darkness, total stress, total anxiety, thrashing to find any way out of this. And then in this other place to just feel pure peace. And I never feel pure peace. Part of that is my four children. You know, there's always a foot to the ribs or something like that. But pure peace is not something that I'm used to. But as stark as those differences were, as dark as the hospital was, as light and beautiful as this place was, that contrast doesn't compare to the most beautiful moment of love in my life compared to the moments, the feelings of love there. That contrast is so great. I just simply can't describe what that love felt like to me. It was such a beautiful experience. And so I found myself back in the hospital, and things were rough. But she had explained to me that I would be okay. And I knew that I would be okay, but I really had a hard time understanding how I would be okay, because I couldn't communicate with anybody. I could not tell them what I was feeling, and nobody seemed to understand they seemed to just assume that I was smart enough to know what a ventilator was. And I was. I knew what a ventilator was, but for some reason, I was in such a dumb state that I couldn't consider that. And I fought and had a really hard time understanding how I was going to be okay, but I knew that I was going to be okay. And finally, I never went back to this place, but an image was shown to me, and I heard her voice once again. And she showed me an image of my family. And she said, we will be together. Everything will be okay. We'll be together again. And at that time, there were no words to explain this, but it became my understanding that she had done something physically. She had put some serious amount of effort into something physical that saved my life. And I don't know what that was, but it became clear to me that she had done something, influenced something that had saved my life. And I knew that we would be okay. But at the same time, I stepped back and I said, we will be okay? Like, are we just some, I didn't quite understand how these two neighbors could just lump themselves in this closely, even though I understood their extreme care and their extreme love for my children in particular. But for her to use the term we was a little strange to me, but I felt that love. And so it was not entirely strange to me. And it wasn't entirely strange to see that image with everybody. So I, for a little less than a week, I was there in the hospital and gradually being able to communicate with my wife. And eventually they pulled out the ventilator. I was off the ventilator, but in a really weakened state. I couldn't do anything on my own. And these poor nurses, a lot of 90-pound nurses who were having to do things for a 260-pound man. And it was a real struggle. And it was a real embarrassment and a real struggle. And one day, they moved me off of my hospital bed and tried to have me sit down, and they plopped my feet right onto the cold floor. And just the nature of COVID at that time, nurses were not super available. And there I was, just acting like I had a man cold again, expecting to be babied. And my feet were on the cold floor, and I was just in this extreme pain and still really unable to communicate. Even though I had communicated with my wife, it was just kind of at their whim. I shouldn't say whim. They cared. They really cared. But it was when they were able to get an iPad or whatever in front of me. That's when I was able to communicate with my wife. And so I threw this real big pity party. My feet are freezing. I'm looking out at this ugly gravel roof of the hospital and just feeling this real pity for myself. And I just thought, you know what? I just about died. I had all this happen to me, and I didn't even have any special experiences. I have a daughter and a son who I would have loved to have seen. And yet, here I am looking at this ugly gravel roof with my cold feet, and nobody cares about me. My wife doesn't want me to, I don't have a phone. I can't talk to my wife or whatever. And so there was a real pity party. And amidst that pity party, I thought back to these two people. And in my brain, I tried to place them in my neighborhood. I thought, okay, they've got to live close, because I know they take such good care of my kids. Where do these people live in the neighborhood? And I traced every home in the neighborhood, and they don't live in my neighborhood. And some of you may have caught this by now. You may have an understanding of who these people were, but I didn't. At that point, I had decided, well,
I was supposed to know these people. I felt like I knew these people, but I couldn't remember their names. This must have just been a thing. How could this have happened to me? How do I not know who they are? And so I tossed this out. Eventually I got home and had a really grueling recovery, and everything at home was miserable. It's still to this day. It's been 8 months or so, and I still have pain in my legs, and I still feel like my lungs are about this big, can hold just a tiny bit of air. But my immediate recovery was absolute misery, and I threw another pity party, and had weeks where my poor wife had to really do everything for me, and I had to have family come in and just help with everything. And it wasn't until I got a little bit better. And it wouldn't have seemed better, except that I could just do things on my own. I could walk 20 steps without somebody having to be there with a walker for me. And I finally, for a couple of nights, had slept through the night. And by slept through the night, I mean I only woke up 8 or 9 times. But this was a massive improvement. And finally, I woke up. Midnight, I woke up. And I thought to myself, I'm finally not in pain. There's nothing particular that's bothering me right now. And yet, I can't sleep. And kind of had this idea in my mind that I needed to trace over these experiences. And I thought, okay, you know, when I was on the verge of death, I considered that I need to do better at this and I need to do better at that. And so I kind of focused on those things, and I thought, okay, what can I do to be a better dad? And it just didn't feel right. Not that I don't have plenty of room to be a better dad, but it felt like that's not where I needed to focus. And immediately, and I'm sitting on a bathroom floor. I'm sitting on a bathroom floor and not in the greatest situation. And this vision, this feeling, this comes back to me perfectly. And I see this woman again. And I live this in every way that I did before. And I feel the love. And I hear her words. And I experience all of this again, and I see this place again. And my wife, you know, she got a 2 a.m. email as I tried to describe some of these things. Now, I want to go back real quick to my family. The idea that I couldn't be trusted, right? That I was a giver-upper. Not that that's a word, but my family's idea that I was a giver-upper. And I had one brother and my wife who really felt as if maybe there was enough goodness in me that I could see this son of mine and this daughter of mine. And Amy had felt some comfort that I might see them. And as I whined for those next 3+ weeks at home, she was a little devastated. She was a little devastated at the idea that, as I was thinking, that nothing special had happened to me, that she felt the comfort of these two children of mine. And yet I did not. I didn't speak of this at all. And as she got that, as she woke up at 6 a.m. or whatever and read that 2-3 a.m. email, it became clear to her. And what finally became clear to me at this time is this: I knew this woman. I remembered this woman. And while I didn't remember her name, those feelings were there. That familiarity was there. And as I, this one last time, saw this woman's face, and I can see it clear as day right now, as I saw her face one more time, I saw my wife's face, and I saw my mom's face, and there was a family resemblance to this woman. And I just knew that I had spoken to my daughter, that this was my daughter. And I've told you all these awful things about me, but one thing that has always been hard for me to accept is that our people who have passed on, that they wouldn't have better things to do than to waste their times with us, to waste their time on us. And yet I felt so strongly that they had wasted so much time, spent so much time on my family and on my kids. And that was something that was so undeniable to me. And it gave me, as I felt, nothing but positive feelings. The one feeling I felt was guilt. The guilt that these people would put so much time into my children, and yet, what have I done for them? What have I done for these people who have loved my children so much? And so maybe an honorary belief of mine was that those who've gone before, those family members of ours, don't have time for us. I always thought, when people talk of guardian angels, I thought, yeah, you're saying that to make people feel good. And, you know, the honorary side of myself had really discounted that idea. And yet, I can't describe, and I don't know how. I don't know what they've done for my kids, but I know that these children of mine intimately know their siblings, even though my oldest daughter had never lived at the same time here as any of her other siblings. And my son was mentally challenged and never really knew what was going on. They both had the same genetic condition. My daughter died at 16 months and my son died at 8 years old. And they were both very, very disabled, never talked, never walked, never really ate on their own. We had feeding tubes for them. And yet, I looked into the eyes of the most beautiful woman. And that's what makes it not so embarrassing to admit to my wife. And even though I didn't understand at the time, I walked with this woman and I stared at her and admired her beauty. And it felt so right, so innocent, so pure. And yet, to explain to somebody, yeah, I watched this woman and I just watched her walk around and admired her beauty. That sounds creepy. It sounds creepy. And even though I didn't know who she was, there was an inability to, think beyond what it was. And there was an inability to do anything but admire her in such an innocent way. But I spoke to this woman and she loved me and she loved my family. And she particularly loved my kids and had spent so much time. Now, I want to talk back to this man. I never saw this man. And I think that the reason why I never saw him is that Vincent was not as deformed as his sister. Vincent was 8 years old when he passed. And frankly, I think had I seen this man, I would have recognized who he was. I would have recognized who he was. And just as my family prayed that I might not see these kids because they didn't have a lot of trust in my obligations here. And I take no offense to that. I take no offense to that. Because something was kept from me. It was kept from me where I was, even though this was, in some ways, this was stereotypical heaven. There were little elements that would have just been your stereotypical heaven, and yet it was kept from me to consider where I might have been. And I also think it was kept from me to see this man's face, because I might have recognized him. And I hate to admit it, but had I known who these people were, I may have been a giver-upper. I may have said, you know what, I tried really hard. I've done a lot, but I sure I sure miss these two. And I may have taken a different direction. And luckily, I don't have that feeling of guilt. I didn't have to make a decision there. But I truly feel that I was blessed to have had some of those things kept from me. And yet to have such a clear memory of a voice, never saw her speak. I saw her laugh. I never saw her mouth move as she spoke, but I have a voice in my head, a perfect voice and a perfect face. And to have been able to see that makes it all worth it. Like I said, I still feel the effects of my hospitalization every day. And that was back in May. And yet, what a blessing this last miserable year was for me. All that aside, this last year has just been a blessing to me in my life. I'll close with this. I didn't feel like I was anywhere for anybody special. I felt like I was just in a place for me and my family, and that this was not a particularly special place for special or important people. It was just our place. And yet the feelings that I felt there made it really hard to be here, even in perfect health, without some of these nagging health problems. There were months where I just really, another hard thing to admit to my wife, there were months where it was really just hard to be in this place. And I like this place, believe it or not, but months that made it really hard to be in this place. And yet, it was just hard to be in this place because the love there, the beauty was so pure. And I think there was much more to come. There was much more available and much more out there. And yet this, which essentially felt like a waiting room, I'd take it. I'd take it any day. If I could have the crumbs or be in the maid's quarters, whatever it may be, there's just so much to look forward to. Let's not rush toward anything, but there's just an immense beauty and an immense love that awaits us. And many of us have really good relationships, and yet I can't help but feel excited for how those relationships expand outside of this life.
Okay, if you have a question, you can ask the question, but you'll have to repeat it so people will know what the question is. I've got a question on the chat now. Are you more patient now since
your— Am I more patient now since my experience? In some ways, yes. Walls and whatever, holes in the walls and things like that just don't bother me the same. There's just certain things that just don't matter anymore.
Any other questions out there? Yes, in the back.
So my dad did not give me COVID. Sorry. Oh, did he get it from me? I don't think so. In fact, I had met him later on that week and still thinking I had, elevation sickness. Saw him again and didn't give it to him that time, but my wife actually had COVID first, and it wasn't anything other than a loss of smell for her. No, in fact, and just the wording. Oh, sorry. He asked if I ever got confirmation from the medical team that I had passed. And I would say this, the wording for this invite actually specified that I had passed. And I will say this, I don't know that I ever passed. there was, I went back and looked at my medical records, and there was no indication that I had passed. There was an urgent moment where a nurse came to me and said, acknowledged some sort of failure and asked if I wanted to talk about it. And I think that was the most urgent moment. But I will say that I don't think I truly flatlined or anything like that. I think that I felt the lack of oxygen and had to be taken away, or I would have done my best to do myself in. My memories of this woman are as clear today as they ever were. The memories of the place have faded a little bit, but my memories of this, there's a woman that I know who has a slightly similar voice, and I never want to hear from her again, because this voice of this woman is so special to me. And this, you know, this voice may be 10% similar. And if I feel like that voice ever kind of convolutes that memory, I sure would hate for that to happen. So I just hope that I don't really hope to never see her again, but that's how special that voice, the memory of that voice is for me.
There's a question here. During your presentation, you said you didn't know exactly where you were. Do you have a better sense of where that was now?
I said that I didn't really know where I was. Absolutely, I know that I was on the other side now. Where I was, and particularly on the other side, I don't know, but I don't. While I never doubted these people, that they were truly there in what I thought was virtual reality, I now understand that this place was not virtual reality, and it was frankly asinine to ever think that it was virtual reality, because there's no technology that even remotely comes close to this. The thing that was hard to accept about this place is it was more real than real life. What was that?
Well, that was the question I was going to ask. It felt that way. Many do feel that way. Did you see anyone else, or did you see any flowers, trees, any scenery?
As far as scenery goes, there was a grass. There was grass out there, and yet there's just such a perfection about it that it didn't feel real. It didn't feel like grass is supposed to feel. But there were no flowers. I smelled flowers. I smelled cleanliness, but I saw no flowers. Essentially, what this place looked like is, you know, I described it as kind of the Sydney Opera House opening up. And it was almost as if we were on a little island in the sky, and there was a cloudy nature to the edge of it. Yeah. I didn't see any other people.
You were coming back and forth two or three times, a state of panic. Body in a state of peacefulness, and then back into your body when you were panicked again and felt depressed. And so, with getting of where we just were, the peaceful feeling, everything's going to be okay, and then back and panicked again. Any thought that maybe as you kept coming back, it was getting a little bit better because there were more, and it's like,
that's a good question. So the question is that because there was peace and then panic and then peace and then panic. Her question is essentially that wondering if I had a better understanding each time. And I would say this, at the time, I never fully understood the place. I never understood the place that I was coming from. And that first time, I knew I had met somebody and I knew it was beautiful, but there was nothing told to me that, hey, you don't need to panic. There was nothing like that told to me. The second time, it was communicated to me that I shouldn't panic. I needed to calm down and everything would be okay. And I accepted that. Now, there was a little bit of panic after that. There was still some panic, but I also had an understanding that I would be okay. I just didn't know how. There wasn't a third time so much as there was just one image showed to me. And that was kind of the nail on the coffin to say, you're going to be okay. You know? Absolutely. Right. And I absolutely retained a memory of the people throughout. I never lost that memory. And I knew what they were saying was true. I knew that love was true, even though I didn't understand immediately where I was. And I didn't understand who they were. But I had just, there was no way of not accepting some of those things that were communicated to me.
Love in one space, but immense love, and then not just like a deep feeling, but like the negative energy in a sense. Somebody's trying to kill me, that's like a whole nother, someone else, almost being demonic. I mean, I don't know if that's what you thought, but so it's just the love, and then oh my gosh, somebody's trying to kill me. I was hoping that sense.
The love absolutely overtook. And I, as he asked, did I ever flatline? Did I ever die? And I really don't think I ever did. I think there was a real moment of crisis in the room. And I don't even know what that was, but I think those carried over memories were absolutely critical in me just not finding a way. I don't know how I was going to give up because they had my hand strapped down, but I was going to find a way to give up. And yet to finally be told you're going to be okay, there was absolutely something valuable there. And so it's hard on one hand to say how confused I was about the place. It's kind of hard to admit that, except that I truly think that it was kept from me. I don't think I was allowed to understand where I was for the idea that it would have been less negative, right? When I was in the hospital, I wanted to die to stop the torture. But if I knew where I was and if I knew who I was with, it may have been a more peaceful decision of leaving. Yeah.
So Travis, in our defense, I looked at your Facebook page and you were a skull, but you mentioned that you died.
Yes. I joke about dying. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Nobody made a mistake. And one thing about it is as we left the hospital, the hospitalist had said that there was a 5% chance that I would survive. And we survived. And, you know, really anybody who knew the specifics of the situation was really, really concerned. I had a nurse at the end say, "We're so happy to see you. We were so worried about your kids." I said, "Well, what about me?" She said, "Well, we thought we knew what was going to happen to you." I said, "I thought I did too. And I thought it wouldn't come fast enough." So,
I've asked a bunch of medical doctors how death is now defined. And I guess if the spirit leaving the body is death, you died, but you didn't flatline, your heart didn't stop. So if you define it that way, you didn't. And so It's kind of death is kind of an ambiguous thing, which is why we call them near-death experiences.
Right.
But anyway, so my question is, what are the major takeaways that you got from your experience? And maybe another way to ask would be, how has your experience changed your outlook on life?
That's a great thing. How has this experience changed my outlook on life? Let me say this. People talk about a life review, and I don't remember a life review. But what I do remember is having this immense feeling of pride in a younger me who could look at somebody who had a cowboy drawl and probably was one of the poorest kids in school. And yet I could be fascinated by the way that this kid played basketball. I just had this overwhelming feeling of love for so many people that I've come across in my life. I had this overwhelming feeling of love. And this isn't the right word to say pride, but I had a real pride in myself that there were versions of myself that could look for the good. And yet, you know, this older version of myself may say, oh, that kid's probably, you know, that kid's dad probably beats him. You know, the older version of myself looks a little bit more and maybe assumes things about people. Whereas I felt so happy with a younger version of myself who, and it wasn't I wasn't actively trying to be good. I just was so amazed with certain people's abilities and the ability to judge, or the tendency to judge, was just gone. And I don't know where that came from. I don't know where those feelings came from. It's possible that I had some sort of life review and relived some of those things, but I just had this overwhelming happy feeling regarding treating people well, and not even treating them well, just being happy for them. And I think that for me, that's a major takeaway. And I've tried throughout my life, you know, if I see somebody walking and carrying groceries, I give them a ride every time. And I've had a lot of smelly and unique people in my car. I feel a little more of a need to do those kind of things, to just take care of people, to actively take care of people and to actively care for people, and even just to be happy. There's such a value in being happy for people's abilities and for the good things that they can do.
One last question.
The experience has given me a lot of hope and increased my faith in the fact that we as spirits are primitive. We were there with your son and daughter in total happiness and surrounded by humanity.
Absolutely. Thank you. And yeah, let me restate that. I won't be able to restate it as well as he has, but he said that my experience gives him a hope that and a increased faith that we are permanent, and that there's a love felt with our family. And I will, just to expand upon that, to see a family resemblance to a little girl who was deformed here on this earth was so special to me. And some of that family resemblance may be a bump on the nose. Some of that family resemblance is imperfections. And yet this woman was perfect to me. And to see that family resemblance and yet to also see and feel that perfection is absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And there's so much to look forward to as far as family and love is concerned, and just an immense amount of comfort that lies there.
Travis, you're a gentleman. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And let's give him a round of applause here. We'd like to invite everyone who is here in person or by Zoom to join us again next month on the fourth Friday at 7 p.m. And if you'd like further information, send me an email to martinstanner@gmail.com. That'll end our meeting tonight. Thanks for participating.